make what you're trying to accomplish any more difficult?
Class B misdemeanor starts getting very difficult because then you start losing your probable cause. Class A misdemeanor, you can arrest on probable cause. Class B misdemeanor, the officer actually has to observe the offense.
Okay, that's a good point. Now, so if we make them Class A misdemeanors then, does that give you what you need?
I believe, I think it does in terms of the ability to arrest. And then the rest is just more a policy decision on how stiff you want that penalty to be with juveniles in particular.
What effect does it have on the adult who's just outside the 1,000 feet, who lines up the runner and gives him the free sample to deliver inside the 1,000 feet? And let's assume that the kid, the runner, gets caught. And that enables you then to go after the supplier. Does the severity of the offense by the runner bounce back so that it increases the severity of the offense by the supplier?
If I might answer that question, Madam Chair and Senator Shoemaker, yes, I believe so, because we'd be charging that person outside the 1,000 feet as a conspirator to commit this crime of selling within 1,000 feet of a school. And if that crime was going to be an A misdemeanor, we'd have conspiracy to commit an A misdemeanor. If it's an A felony, then it's conspiracy to commit an A felony. So it would have impact for the person who tries to shield himself in that manner.
Okay, so that would argue then in favor of having it be an A felony across the board, because that allows you to lay that one at the feet of the supplier. And that really is what you'd be doing with this, right? Unless you have really blatant violation of the law right within the 1,000 feet.
Jack.
Except for, in that hypothetical, Mr. Penn, you would still fall, the principal and the runner situation that you described, you'd still fall within the purview of the distribution of minors statute. Mm-hmm.
That could be possible to plead it in that manner, yes.
And that would be a Class A felony?
If the
depending on what the substance was.
Yeah, the substance, and if the juvenile was 3 years younger than the defendant.
If the substance is marijuana?
It would be an A felony, Senator.
Okay.
A felony.
So any of the common street drugs would be a Class A felony, provided only that the kid is 3 years younger than the conspirator?
At that problem, Madam Chair and Senator Shoemaker, we'd run into that problem that defense would be available to one of the conspirators, and then it would be problematic whether or not we could convict the adult of this conspiracy if this person can't be, if the runner can't be convicted of the severe crime.
Because if the runner is only the same age as the user, then you can't have a conspiracy between the supplier and the runner, because so you can't get the supplier either. Is that right?
We'd have that difficulty. I haven't really sat down and charted that through in my mind, but that would be a problem that we would not encounter with the statute if it's a crime to sell at a school.
Pretty important question, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think logically, if one of the two conspirators is an adult and falls within the law, I would think he could be guilty even if the person he's conspiring with is outside the law because too young. I would think that would follow. He is still conspiring to deliver a substance to a minor. The fact that his partner in crime is himself a minor, I don't think that lets the adult go. Would I be correct in that?
That's certainly the argument the state would be making in the prosecution.
Yeah, I think that must be the law.
Madam Chair, I'm going to have to go to labor pretty quick. And
let me see where we are here. Are we satisfied that we've extended the pieces?
Well, I think okay, Senator Hill's raising a question. If we limit it to delivering it to a student, that would get at the thing we're talking about right here. But I think another thing we're trying to get at here, and let's correct me if I'm wrong, we generally don't, we want to come down fairly strong on people smoking or using drugs within the vicinity of a school.
It says deliver.
delivered.
Well, I know. I understand.
You can use stand in front of the school.
Let's have a motion here. I'm sick and tired.
It doesn't do anything.
Chair, I'd like to make a motion on this. Certainly, I think we all can go along with the Dash 4 amendment, and there's a further amendment that Senator Brockman has offered, as I understand it, that rather than using vocational school for minors, it would say vocational school where
the majority of the students are minors.
Right.
Let me suggest, if you look at line 1 and 2 of the Dash 5 amendment, see whether that satisfies that concern. No. So you're dealing with any school attended primarily by minors.
I know, but what about using that language?
Oh, that's okay.
We can take that.
Just so long as that point is made.
Just move line 1 and 2 of the Dash 5 amendments, get that into the bill.
Let's do that. Madam Chair, I'd move line 1 and 2 of the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2369.
Senator Grinsky has moved line 1 and 2 of the Dash 5 amendments dealing with House Bill 2369. Are there objections to that? Hearing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair, I'd move House Bill 2369 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Right. Question, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Earlier in our discussions on this bill, there was a question as to whether we were removing private colleges and junior colleges and universities. Is that still in the bill?
No, that's out now.
Is that out? I don't recall.
It was amended out by the House, Senator Brockman. The House amendment that you should have directly behind your bill.
Okay. Was there any?
Line 8.
All right. Was there any? Period. Would there be any problem with the committee of putting it back in?
I think so.
Yeah.
Thought I'd ask the question.
Senator Hill.
Well, Madam Chair.
That would bring in community colleges.
Before we vote on, I would like to get some discussion about unlawful delivery of a controlled substance to a student within 1,000 feet of a school. I mean, what is the objection to that? I mean, if we're talking about trying to keep people from giving drugs to students, and that would not only take in the adult, but it would take in the juvenile who delivers to another student.
Well, this is any person.
But what I'm saying is that, see, the problem is with that. If the purpose of this bill is to protect young people from the distribution of drugs, if you have two adults who aren't even students, who delivers something to another within that school, they're subject to a Class A felony, and it has nothing to do with the purpose of what we're trying to do here.
Good.
Senator.
Yes.
I think it does, Senator. As Senator Shoemaker pointed out, frequently you'll have kids that flunked out or dropped out of school or maybe even graduated who still hang around schools. And they're going to have other kids around them, and I think there is a message there.
Well, I know there's a message, but I'm talking about a violation. I'm talking about somebody being charged with a Class A felony that could be 20 years in prison.
Well, if the objective of this thing was just to hit the minors, we could be just amending.
No, that's not what we're talking about. He's talking about adults who deliver to a student.
Any adult or any student, any juvenile who delivers to another student.
Well, it's a different bill, though.
You're talking about selling drugs to minors.
Like, it's a similar concept as minor in possession, but I think this bill goes beyond that.
Well, Madam Chair, I put it this way. Since we want to move on, I would oppose this amendment, and I will offer that next one.
Okay.
Because if the idea is to protect students, then I think that's what we should do. If it's the idea is to happen to get somebody else who happens to be doing something that either lives or happens to be in the vicinity of school, if they're not doing something to students, then I think that they are in a different class. So we're making a real big exception. I'm not aware of anything where we're picking out. We have laws here in this state right now, whether you agree with it or not, that possession or that a small amount of marijuana is treated differently. And suddenly somebody passes a joint and they're charged with a Class A felony. Given the price of bed space, that's in prison, that's not who I want to have in there. Now, if they're, now, I'm willing to look at this when you're talking about protecting students, and I understand the purpose of that, and I'm for that. But, you know, if we're just to happen to catch someone else with the seriousness of a Class A felony, and I think that that's not what is intended here. And I don't think that anybody should be giving anything to students. I don't care whether it's marijuana. I don't care whether it's heroin or cocaine. But when it comes to some other situation that doesn't even involve students, we're going to catch some people up like that. Maybe even because they happen to live within the vicinity of a school, within 1,000 feet of a school. I don't think that's what we're trying to get.
Let's say theoretically that they are adults within 1,000 feet of a school and they're involved in drug activity. Do you think they're going to isolate their activity? You may not have caught them this time, but there are other.
If they're really doing that, we have lots. I mean, this is not the only penalty we have to catch drug dealers.
With anybody, you got to catch them doing it. Okay. I mean, so whether we can speculate about what they do. I'm talking about what you catch somebody doing when they're going to be charged with a felony. So that's not speculation. And if they're selling to students, I think we can nail them.
Or giving it to students.
Or giving it, or
yeah,
doing anything.
Yeah, that's really what it
students.
Is. It's delivery. Yeah, without say, we're talking. If your motion.
And then, and see, that covers the runner.
Yeah.
As well.
Okay, I'm willing to support Senator Hill's amendment.
Read it, please. Sure.
It would be delivery to a student of a controlled substance within 1,000 feet of a school is the last felony.
Well,
and it would include, and we're not, and we're talking about delivery at every level, including one which would be a violation. And we're talking about it, not adult delivery to students.
Marijuana,
it could be student
right,
to student.
Wouldn't necessarily be a student, though. Wouldn't it be a minor? Because they might have dropped out of school and just be hanging
but
around.
It doesn't make any difference who they are, as long as they're either delivering something to one of the students there.
That's what I'm saying. Student, though, means that they're in school. Maybe it's not
that's
a student.
Right.
Maybe it's a minor.
Yeah,
there's a
the
law
me.
That covers them.
They have to deliver
but it's
it to
not
a
an
student.
Enhancement. That's what this bill is about.
Yeah, but if you're talking about delivering to someone who is not in school, delivering to a minor, that is already covered. If the purpose of this is to protect schools and to protect students, you don't want, if that's who we're trying to protect. That's my understanding. I understand we're talking about the activity that has increased within a school. Now, that's what I thought we were talking about. And I think what we're talking about there are students. If someone has dropped out, well, you know, they're not, if they take drugs within the school, they're nailed. If they've dropped out of school, that's very unfortunate. But I'm trying to get with the purpose of this and not try to drag in people who are not going to be, who could be, that is not the purpose of this thing to get to.
Yeah, you'd be delivering, you'd have to be, you'd deliver to a student.
Well, my only concern, Madam Chair, was that if we have someone who's dropped out, they're hanging
right.
around the school, they're not technically a student anymore, but they're within 1,000 feet of a school. And because they're not a student, they get a different penalty than the kid who's still in school.
If they deliver it to a student, they get the same penalty. It's delivering to a student, regardless of who they happen to be, whether they're juveniles, dropped in, dropped out, or adults.
What I'm saying is the person receiving the drug may be a minor who's dropped out of school. They're not a student, technically. But they're within 1,000 feet of a school, so because of that, they get a different penalty than if the person delivered the drug to someone who's still in school and therefore a student. It's the student part I have a problem with.
Well, I could be wrong. Now, I mean, I think that most people who drop out of school don't hang around school all the time.
They may sell drugs at that school.
Well, if they sell drugs, they're there to sell drugs to students. And if they're giving drugs away, they're there to give drugs to students. So, Madam Chair, I mean, we can go ahead.
Madam Chair, if I may enter just a little bit, I just oppose that as much as anything, I guess, presented on this bill. The two kids dropped out. They're right across the street at the local hangout where all the other kids go, and it's okay for them, really, to pass it back and forth and use it, and that's cool. It's perception, again, amongst those students, the younger ones over there, that's a slick thing to do. And this is why it's here, for good reason is perception of the drugs and that it's not neat. I'll oppose the amendment.
Well, Madam Chair,
I'm ready to vote.
Let's see if we can figure out a way to deal with this.
Well, Madam Chair,
we've got an excellent
could have
it
delivery to minor or a student. That catch what we're trying to get at?
I think what we're trying to catch in the authors of this bill is that we don't want any of it going on around the school, no matter who the hell they are.
Well, the thing is that it doesn't cover that. If
it says deliver, is unlawful to deliver.
I mean, it doesn't say you can possess here. You can possess it, you can smoke, you can use it. It's right. This is just for delivery.
That's right.
You're not going to... So it's okay, it's going to be around as long as I bring it in and don't give it to anybody, it's going to be there.
There's possession laws all over the place.
Well, maybe the minor, I think probably the minor piece would do it. Would take care of the Grinsky concern. And I think that is legitimate that you have it because those kids
so
are there.
A minor or
just the definition of student. I still don't like the amendment, but... Assuming it passes, I'd prefer it said minor rather than student. That's the only concern.
Well, okay. Minor or a student.
I think a minor. Well,
minor.
That's a good point.
Yeah, that's
a minor,
true.
To a minor. In other words, if it...
I think
to a student or a minor. I think it ought to be both.
You leave it both. You've got some 19-year-old seniors that you don't want to get... You don't want
a minor or a student because it does take in the senior.
I think that you really need to...
A minor or a student. Madam Chair, I would move that.
Senator Hill is moving the addition of a minor or student on line 9, in the appropriate place on line 9, Jack. I'm not sure where it would fit exactly.
Is it clear that the student we're talking about is a student of that school?
It doesn't make any difference, I think.
It doesn't make any difference.
No, I would.
A student of the whole school happens to be there. Okay, yeah. Fair enough.
Okay, I think there are objections. Let's call the roll on this amendment that's been offered by Senator Hill.
Senator Boehner?
No.
Brockman?
No.
Brinsky?
No.
Hill?
Aye.
Shoemaker?
Aye.
Brinner?
Aye.
Fuller?
Aye. That motion is carried. Okay. We have the bill as amended, I think.
Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 2369 as amended to the floor for due pass recommendation.
Senator Hill has moved House Bill 2369 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Aye.
Brockman?
Aye.
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Shoemaker?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, motion carried. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, I do need to leave to go to the other committee.
Okay.
I'll be back as soon as I can. I will be back.
Yeah.
If I must. And I think I can. He said I need to
for and I guess I do need to have, I don't know what that makes a difference. We will explore the impact of this and decide what if anything, anybody wants to do with the... impact of the beds, at least we'll forward that on to the sentencing guideline folks and know that these folks will take care of somebody else's space as we move ahead then. Okay, let's take up 3015 with our little additional amendment, and after all the fuss on the floor about new dancing, I thought it might be useful if we add a little note to 3015, which deals with nuisances and local government's ability to deal with nuisance statutes and drug houses, thinking that the new dancing pieces are probably fitting under this bill. Jack?
Yes, I have
two amendments, I think.
Amendments for you, Madam Chair.
What about the city's amendment?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
dash four amendment, Madam Chair, is, or excuse me, the dash five amendment is the language having to do with the nuisance aspects of nude entertainment. There was an additional
Yeah, I have a dash of an A3. I don't have any five at all.
Did I say, I'm sorry, I meant A3.
Okay.
There is an additional amendment or modification to that language that's been proposed by the League of Oregon Cities, and quite honestly, I apologize, I forgot that we had this one. That would add language at the end of the section, and I'll read that to you now. The authority granted to cities and counties by this section is in addition to, and not in lieu of, the authority granted to a city or county under its charter and the statutes and constitution of this state. That's simply to make sure that it's clear that this amendment, A3, does nothing to limit the powers they already have.
Okay. Are there objections to adding the city's amendments?
Move the HB 3015A3 amendments.
With the addition of the city's language, please.
With the addition of the city's language.
Okay. Are there objections to that? Hearing none, so ordered. Okay. What else do you have, Jack?
I've also drafted an amendment, Madam.
What?
Sorry.
I didn't have a...
You want to vote no?
No, I didn't have a problem with them. I just wondered if line two, if we had all the words in there we needed. Cities and counties may adopt reasonable time, place, and manner. In a reasonable time, place, or manner. Something? Are all the words in there that need to be?
They are, Senator. Reasonable time, place, and manner is basically a term of art used for...
Never been known as an artist. I'm sorry. Okay. Good.
Okay. Nope. Good. There are no objections to that. Jack, one more amendment which comes to you from...
Yes, Madam Chair. There was an additional concern that I've drafted an amendment to address. This is in keeping with the action that we took on the other bill to drug paraphernalia bill to exclude needle exchange programs. There is a provision in this bill that brings into nuisance activity, and this is page 2, lines about 4 through 6, that brings into the provisions of the nuisance law any place wherein are kept, stored, or located any of the devices, equipments, or things used for an authorized delivery. This bill would, this amendment would exempt hypodermic syringes with the intent being that we don't want to close down a place like Outside Inn, who is going to distribute needles to help prevent AIDS.
Okay.
I'm sure. I guess I'm trying to understand now where. Well, this is the drug house bill.
Right.
And the thing is that a house that that distributes needles for that purpose is not a drug house. And I guess I'm trying to understand why we're adding these amendments to that.
Senator, I think you're correct in the everyday, the understanding is that there would not be a drug house, but I think the way the statute is written, that it could be applied to those places. Because it includes places where devices, equipment, things or substances used for the unauthorized delivery.
This is not going to get in the way of the drug house.
Okay.
Nuisance statute of itself, right, Jack?
No, not at all. Not at all.
You sure about that?
Yes, I am. The only intent is to exclude a place like Outside Inn that has a needle exchange program.
Well, I think it's clear what our intention is, and it's clear the way it's drafted. Are there objections to the A4 amendments? Hearing none, so ordered. Okay.
Madam Chair, we have everything?
We have everything.
Let's go ahead and move.
Wait, what do you want, Springer?
I was reminded that I think I had proposed an amendment, dash A2. Have those been considered earlier?
Sorry.
Adopted, rejected?
What are they?
It speaks, I think, to the same purpose as the A4 amendments, but it was concerned with a further clarification that this would not apply to the extent that the devices, equipment, things, or substances are used for delivery, manufacture, or possession of a controlled substance are kept, stored, or located for the purpose of a lawful sale or use of those items.
We did discuss it. The committee had
grave reservation.
Yeah, I heard it got kind of a hoot.
no, not a hoot.
My concern was that we may find that there are folks who have a business that involves the lawful use of, I guess, equipment, things, or substances that are used for delivery, manufacture, possession of controlled substance. I'm thinking of pharmacies, pharmaceutical supply, et cetera. But, why don't I go ahead and move the dash A2 amendments, and let's just try it that way.
Okay. Dash Springer has moved the dash A2 amendments.
I got to get myself.
Are there objections?
Yes.
Yeah. Will you?
Take a vote.
Okay, call the roll, please.
No.
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 I don't know yet. I haven't had a chance to even think what we're talking about.
Okay.
Somebody explain to me. I'm sorry. I was gone during the first part of this. I just returned, and I haven't caught up with you yet.
We've got the bill all ready to go except for the A2 amendments, which Springer has offered.
Just say no, and you'll be okay.
Or you can say yes.
Yeah, say yes. That'd be even better. Shall be enjoined.
You say yes?
Any place we can control substance.
You can take my calls on this.
Have the A2 been moved?
Yes, we're there.
And you
we're
missed a golden opportunity
to
vote upon them,
vote?
Senator.
Yes, I'll vote aye.
No. What?
Brendan, want me to vote aye on that?
Well, maybe for the people who weren't here, maybe Springer should explain at the moment.
I don't understand it as I look at it.
I'll vote no.
Okay, that's four no votes.
Yeah,
so
that didn't pass. All right.
So what would you? You can be unresolved at the
okay,
moment,
I'll
and the chair would also
flush
vote
that
no.
From my mind.
So we now have five vote notes.
I have another problem with this thing.
No, the bill's ready to go.
Well, I raised this before. I'm concerned about it. And that's in section 12, where it says that the complaint is filed by a person other than the attorney general, district attorney, county attorney, or city attorney. It shall not be dismissed except upon a sworn statement made by the complainant and the attorney of the complainant setting forth the reasons why the suit should be dismissed. That means, I think, that a person who brings such a nuisance suit, sort of in the nature of a private attorney general, if you will, cannot be dismissed, regardless of how frivolous that suit might be. And I don't think that's good. This is sort of vigilante justice, and I don't... Sometimes that's appropriate, but I don't think it's appropriate without limitations, and I'm troubled by that one.
Madam Chair, I'd move House Bill 3015 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
I think we have discussed it before. Unless you have specific language, we do need to move it.
What was the purpose of this? Is that suffering?
Well, my recollection is that this the section which contains language that I think Senator Shoemaker has spoken to, I think it has been around ever since this original law was drafted, many decades ago. And I guess it was because of a sort of an extraordinary remedy. I haven't examined the history of this. I'm not even sure if there's been any litigation on this subject. My sense is if there were an abuse, it probably would have surfaced at some point during the interim when there was a lot of work performed on this section of the law. But
I see one other deletion here on lines 28 and 29 of page 3. The law as it now stands says if the suit is brought by a taxpayer and the court finds that there was no reasonable ground or cause for said suit, the costs may be taxed to such taxpayer. That is proposed to be deleted, so you don't even have that sanction anymore.
Well, I think if we, I guess I'm willing to move the bill as it is, and since it's existing law and people have put in a lot of work on it, and if we have an example or two by next session rolling around where we have difficulty, that somebody brings something in that they can't get out, that doesn't get let, that doesn't get either, what do you call it, ameliorated or abated, and they still won't let go of it, then I think that's where we are in the abatement piece. So, unless we have any quick way to deal with it, I would go ahead and I would again.
We could leave sub.
That it is an exception from the criminal penalties if the officer is doing so under these circumstances and as long as he does not intentionally fail to record in its entirety the tape discussion. So if there is something accidental, this officer is now, under this statute, going to be in a problem. I might say that a couple of sessions ago, there was a provision to require all tape confessions to be tape recorded. And Senator Hill may recall that bill. It did not pass. But one thing that we heard was that bill had been, there had been 24 judicially created exceptions to that bill because there had been 24 things recognized by the courts where there's machine breakdowns, all kinds of things that happen where that taped confession doesn't actually get reduced to tape. That's the problem that we see with that amendment there. And that's why we'd ask that you not do the amendment.
Steve Anderson with the OCDLA.
Yes.
I cannot elaborate too much further beyond what Mr. Morris said, except to the extent to say I would recognize all of those problems that Mr. Penn articulated are possible, but I think this would be a motivator to check the batteries beforehand and to make sure everything's in good working order, and it would, I believe, lessen the likelihood of any of those things happening. Other than that, I can't say anything.
Madam Chair? What effect does this bill have, if any, on the use of the tape in a subsequent proceeding or the use of evidence that is developed from information that you obtain on the tape?
Can you respond to that, please?
Madam Chair and Senator Shoemaker, it was my recollection, although I was trying to find it in the bill, I simply can't answer that question. I think the intent was that this would be a statutory violation. It would be up to the court to make a determination. It's not constitutional in dimension. It'd be up to the court to make a determination whether or not a violation of this statute would mandate suppression. Other than that, I couldn't give you a better answer off the top of my head.
So if a tape were obtained illegally, you couldn't use the tape or the fruits of the tape, right? I assume that would be true. If the tape is obtained illegally, you couldn't use the tape or the fruits of the tape. in a case.
Madam Chair and Senator Shoemaker, the reason I couldn't find my answer in the bill was that this was in the amendment Mr. Jackson had proposed, that it, the last statement is that failure to comply with the, well, that's the reporting requirement, shall not affect the admissibility of evidence. So that still doesn't answer your question. I think the court is going to have to make a determination, since it's a statutory violation, does that, is it appropriate to suppress or not? If it rises to constitutional dimensions, there would be suppression for sure, but it's going to be a court decision, and eventually there would be appellate case law that this kind of statutory violation would always be a bar or would not always be a bar. As we have an arraignment statutes and knock and announce for service of warrants, those we've had case law that's built up.
Okay. What then of a tape that is legally obtained? In other words, it's not, we passed this law and then it is not illegal anymore to tape a conversation in these circumstances. What of that tape? Do you have the same test about whether you can use it? Or does it, because we've made lawful the taping, that therefore the tape would be admissible and the fruits of the tape would be admissible?
Madam Chair and Senator Shoemaker, I think the analysis would be as long as you have complied with all of the parts of the statute, then it is legal. And then there would be no basis to suppress it or to keep it out.
Okay.
If we violate any subsection or any wording in the statute, then it can be attacked as illegal. And then the second analysis, should it be suppressed as illegal?
So coming back then to the intentional, the word intentionally, if we leave that in, then a tape which is not established as an intentional failure to record would then be admissible, even if it's incomplete. In other words, you've got an incomplete tape, the evidence is conflicting whether it was intentionally incomplete or unintentionally incomplete, but it's now not a violation of the statute. Therefore, the tape, which we now don't know whether it's intentional or not, would be admissible. Seems to me that this invites abuse by inviting a careful taping which doesn't carry the whole story, and then making it appear that that was unintentional.
That is the purpose that I propose the amendment,
yeah.
Senator.
Okay,
Madam Chair and Senator Shoemaker, if I could only say, the difficulty with just pulling intentionally out of there and leaving it, then the whole phrase in 28 and 29, providing the person who obtains the conversation does not fail to record and preserve the conversation in its entirety, then you have all of these scenarios that can happen where through no fault of the officer, it doesn't get done in its entirety.
Okay, middle ground here where we can deal with this in a way that makes a little bit, you know, I can understand if you just pull out intentionally, it goes the other way so far that you can't even raise it. You can't even get to the question of whether it's, I mean, if you've got some part that's not even material to the case that's sort of dropped off the end or whatever it is, that you can't bring it in. And I suppose it seems to me that there is a way that we could do some wording and figure this one out a little better. I do think that it's worth some scrutiny. I guess I need to ask Dale and Steve and Senator Shoemaker whether it's possible to deal with that or not.
I agree with you, Madam Chair. I have no problem with not holding an officer, saying you're not guilty of a crime if you made a mistake. I mean, but I think maybe that would follow anyway. I mean, let's assume we take intentionally out of there and you have a conversation which proves to be incomplete, and you're charging an officer now with a crime of unlawfully taping, and
mm-hmm.
he shows that this was a mistake. This was certainly nothing that mm-hmm. he intended. I can't imagine you'd convict that person. I mean, there's no scienter there.
Yeah. Except that, Madam Chair and Senator Shoemaker, look what we've done. We've said that it is prohibitive contact or prohibited conduct to tape and to use a wire order. And then this is an exception, providing that you tape in its entirety. And when it isn't, and when you take the intentionally out, which brings in the mens rea element, that's the intent there, is to put intentionally there so that it is something the officer has done wrong, then the officer would be liable for doing that.
I think we probably need to do a little more work then to see if we can figure out how to cut this one the way we want it. I think we all know what we're driving at here.
Anybody, do we think we can go back and rework this a little? Steve, your comments?
Senator Cohen, I think it could be worked out. I cannot think of a good way at this moment, but I think we could do it relatively easily.
Senator Shoemaker?
Let me raise two other problems I have. I'm not comfortable with the deletion of the words direct supervision that were done in the House, because I think without direct in there, it kind of opens up the possibility of sort of giving somebody a freelancer permission to go out and tape record these things, sort of a private investigator or whatever. And I'm not comfortable with that. Direct supervision at least has a law enforcement officer very much a part of the process. Do you see where I am, Steve?
On line 20.
It's line 20 and line 24 of page 2. The House deleted the word direct in both those lines. And I guess I have no problem with having a team where the officer is part of the team. They have direct supervision. But I do have problems with just giving somebody authority to go out and investigate and be wired for sound.
Steve Anderson, Senator Cohen, Senator Shoemaker, I would concur with you. I must confess I was not present at the House session, and I don't recall, or I don't know the rationale for that.
I think we heard the rationale in testimony here about why they were concerned that if in fact if they weren't in the same room, that they would be considered not in direct supervision. So we need to see what that is and work that one out. I think probably that's as I recall, isn't that right, Dale, that they were concerned about?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Seems to me to be stretching it. I mean, if you've got a person recording and a person receiving and they're acting as a team, of course they're not going to be in the same room, but they're a team.
Senator Shoemaker, if you do have an officer receiving and someone else sending, then that person is obviously under some control and supervision.
That's fine. I have no problem with that one.
Yeah.
What I don't like is somebody out there who's taping and there's no officer listening in.
Mm-hmm.
But you're just out there doing your thing and you're talking to people and you're taping all this good stuff, and then you come running in and deliver your tapes. Now that's, I think, getting pretty dicey.
Certainly.
And picking up all kinds of stuff, and then you'll use what you think you can properly use and other stuff you won't use, but you've collected all this stuff, I think, improperly. And that I don't like.
I would agree, and just simply our position was that isn't the way that it is done, and typically you don't just give someone this equipment and send them out. But.
Yeah, I don't want to open that up so that we can do that. And then I had one other thought. The exigent circumstances, maybe if we don't permit a second recording without a court order within any 24-hour period or something. In other words, when something comes up fast and you got to deal with it, deal with it. But then if you think you're going to have to follow up on that situation because you're just in the first part of a transaction, but you've got a little time, then go and get your order, rather than allowing the second one also to be done the same way without a court order. It seems to me that provides a little bit more of a break, but not one that's going to get in the way of really using this thing to put the clamps on people. How do you respond?
Madam Chair and Senator Shoemaker, we did discuss that matter. The difficulty is that it is difficult to foresee in these kinds of situations that we described. The fast-moving call, the sale is going to take place in 15 minutes, or that type of thing, which is what we're talking about, and law enforcement officers that came and said 50% of those buys take place under those kinds of circumstances, that really guts the whole idea of the bill, of the 24-hour notice, because we're simply saying that in a large number of cases they don't have that 24-hour notice.
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, I made a similar suggestion in testimony on the public hearing, and I can't dispute the statistics that much of the time it's critical. My feeling had been, and it is only anecdotal, that most of the time they were ongoing investigations, and that much of the time there were repeated inquiries and repeated tapings of the same people, or at least the same group of people, and that much of the time the investigation, with response to the previous discussion of, you know, is it possession or is it a manufactured delivery, much of the time the subsequent taping, that's what the concern is. There's a pyramid of that type of a business, and the concern of the authorities is to get to the top of the pyramid, and so that many times they are in fact making repeated recordings.
Okay. Judge Breyer?
Well, Madam Chair, I know we spent a lot of time on this and want to move along.
No,
I want to support Senator Shoemaker's efforts in this area. I do have a question to Dale. Is part of the concern here, I assume, you know, if you've got a police officer that's undercover, the police officer's testimony in just about any circumstance is going to be fairly credible in the eyes of most juries, unless there's some reason to establish otherwise. And if you put a wire on that officer, you're really kind of making it ironclad with that witness's credibility. But if the concern is, or your desire is to use other people, quote, as the agents, you know, a snitch, basically, or confidential, reliable informant, or someone, you know, who is, it's a third party whose credibility is zero without the wire, basically, or is marginal because of they're being factored into their situation as an informant because they've got charges pending or they're going to be charged. I mean, that's what I'm seeing happening here in real life. Is that's why I'm tending to support Senator Shoemaker, is that if we're talking about third parties, not police officers, who are carrying the wire, whose credibility is at risk to begin with, otherwise the wire isn't so important, yet they're the people who may have greater access, and you don't want to put your police officers in a position of risk, you know, send in the snitch with the wire, not the officer. That's why I think Senator Shoemaker's amendment is more important to me. If I'm perceiving what's going to happen in the real world out there.
Are you talking about the direct or the intentionally? Both.
Both. But the direct in the circumstances I've described.
Yeah. Madam Chair and Senator Springer, the testimony really focused on the fact that this would apply to both situations. We do have police officers that go in, and you heard some of them testify about personal experiences that they had. It would also apply in a situation where a police officer cannot get in and that you have to use a confidential informant. It helps you just know that this informant is being truthful with you, and also you can protect the safety of that informant and you establish what actually is going on, and that you don't have someone trying to set up somebody by walking in. You can search them and do all the types of things that you can to ensure that an informant isn't feeding you a line, but it is helpful to be able to listen exactly what happens inside, both for safety and the truth of the situation. But it applies across the board, I guess. That's what I'm saying.
Thank you.
Okay. But I guess the issue before us is whether it's worth going back and trying to work on better information about what we need by direct, or whether we just put it back in, or whether, and again, it's the same thing with the intentionally piece, whether you try to trap some understanding language that deals with it conditionally, or whether you just take out the word intentionally and assume that the DAs are not going to prosecute a police officer if they fail to record the entire conversation, or if they're third party who is under
their direct supervision or their supervision, however we finally end up doing that, their direct supervision fails to do something in its entirety. So those are, I guess, where...
The question I have
is whether you think it's worth, whether it's an up or down vote on these two words, or whether there are ways we can define the understanding of what we're talking about in a way that would make it better.
Madam Chair, I can, Dale Penn again. The direct supervision is something that we put in the original bill. It was amended out by the House because of their concerns. I can certainly live with the direct being put back in. That's the intent. I think we've established clearly the legislative intent that you don't mean it just simply because you can't see the person, that that isn't supervision. I have great problems with the intentionally factor because it complicates not only just that I exercise my discretion in not prosecuting that police officer, but we have now established that's an illegal act. And then that implicates this whole procedure on the fact that it's illegal and civil liability problems. But besides that, admissibility problems and whether or not any of this flies at all. That simple word is a very big complicator. I don't know how to get around it. I think the intent here is that if there are mistakes and it's an innocent mistake, then it's not covered here. If it's an act by a police officer to fabricate or to intentionally do something wrong, that is covered. And I think that's a policy choice for the committee.
And the police officer would, that, your terminology, the police officer would also extend to the third party out there who's wearing the wire, who's the...
Certainly.
Who's probably one of the offenders. I mean, is that, I mean, I guess, but how are we going to make some better assurances of that? That's the part, I think, that I worry about.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess it's a policy decision there. This is prohibited conduct unless you comply with the terms of the statute. And the statute presently says intentional misconduct will create problems for you. If it's a mistake, it will not. It becomes a matter of proof. Can we show which is which?
Misconduct. Okay. Well, I guess I do. I have any objections to put the word direct back in, given the statement?
Like,
are there objections to that?
Before you put it in, Madam Chair.
I'm talking about line 20 under the direct supervision on page 2, and
line 24.
And on line 24.
When did it get taken out?
Well, it got taken out in the House, and they didn't reprint the bill. So, hearing no objections, that's back in.
And we're going to work on the intentionally thing to see if we can find a way to protect the officer from being prosecuted for a mistake, but protect against the fruits of that being used.
Well, I'm willing to sort of see where we are with that if we want to work on that part.
I've got a couple of other questions as I've been sort of reading this thing over and over again. The word or on line 26. What does that mean? So when a police officer obtains a conversation from a person who you believe has committed or is engaged in committing or is about to commit a felony, providing the felony is a crime punishable as a felony under those statutes, or the circumstances at the time the conversation is obtained are of such exigency it would be unreasonable to obtain the court order. What does the or mean? Does that mean that if it's a drug crime, you don't have to have exigent circumstances? Any drug crime.
Any drug felony.
Yes. Any other felony, you have to have exigent circumstances. Is that right?
Or a court order. Yes, that's what this bill is all about, is taking drug crimes out
of the
as a special circumstance.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I guess then you're arguing that we shouldn't have anything that limits the amount, the frequency with which you can record evidence of drug crimes without a court order. In other words, kind of open it up so that drug crime investigation you can just do without a court order, period.
Except that we've, Senator Shoemaker, we've amended this bill so that we would be reporting, the police are reporting to us, we'd be reporting to DOJ, DOJ would be reporting
to
the legislature.
So we can revisit the subject.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. One other suggestion, and this actually would broaden this, but I think it's, I don't think this was intentional. If we're talking about conversation or conversations in sub A, that is under court order, I would imagine you want to also deal with conversations under sub B, or your implication is going to be that you can only go after one conversation, and I don't think that's what anybody wants, if this is to be effective.
That's correct.
There are quite a few places in that sub B where you're going to have to make that change.
That,
the word conversation, I think, is three or four different times there.
Steve Anderson, Senator Cohn, Senator Shoemaker, that was sloppy on my part when I drafted those.
Okay, you'll fix that then.
I have no problem with that.
Correct.
Okay, folks. We've got, we're still outstanding on this bill. We probably have the intentionally part. And I guess that's the question of whether we're going to back and we'll try to rework that.
I think we should.
I think we'll vote on it.
Well, I guess that we need to find out whether I'd be willing to set it aside to see if we can get some part that deals with the intentionally better language. We're going to have to come back. We have 1, 2, 3 bills left. I guess we could also settle the part of the Jack. You're pointing to the sub one.
Definitional language.
The definitional language is now, we have to make a decision. I guess the question is whether you want to have possession involved in this as well. I'm just trying to
say. You're talking about the first part of defense lawyers?
Yeah.
You don't want it.
And does anybody want it?
No, I think it should be the same as we settled upon in the other bill.
Okay.
Crime punishable as a felony.
I don't, Madam Chair.
Okay, that's out. Just check, double checking so we know where we are.
On the intentionally thing, I don't understand how we can take that out. I mean, this is allowing them to record without getting in trouble.
Well, I think that the part of it is you could define the circumstances of which the recording can be used in a more, if it is complete or incomplete. So it's not a question of just removing intentionally. You'd go come back with a paragraph of defining if the recording is incomplete, the following circumstances have to be the case. This is how you could use it, or this is how it would have to be played.
Let me ask a question, and maybe Jack can answer it. The way this is worded. Well, no, let me back up. Does this address the issue of whether or not the recording is admissible, as well as whether or not the officer is subject to liability or prosecution?
My understanding, Senator, has been that was the main purpose of this bill.
To
make these recordings admissible.
Well, I agree with that, but
so that's an issue that could be, if I have an opportunity to work on the intentionally aspect of this further, I could distinguish between admissibility and liability for the police officer, if that's the committee's wish.
That's how I would talk about reworking.
So you'd like to make it the direction that Senator Shoemaker, I apologize because I had to leave for a minute, but you're concerned then about continuing to make it admissible.
Let me explain what I mean. I think that we should not allow an incomplete tape to be admissible.
I don't have
a problem in not holding an officer criminally responsible for a mistake.
I assumed that it would still be admissible from what I was hearing there. The only thing I was hearing from the district attorney was that they were concerned the officer could get prosecuted. But I think, again, and it was substantiated by his testimony, that if you start throwing out a tape because you don't have 100% of it, you're going to be throwing out a lot of tape.
Well, I guess that's not how I'd see it happen. I'd see it bring in for some determination by the court of whether it is admissible or not. Because the other hand, it would be automatically come in without any question. I think the court ought to make some determination whether in fact an incomplete will be admissible. That's what I want.
That's cross-examination. Wait, you get into that. I don't... It seems to me that you let it in and then you let the defense attorney cross-examine on what happened to the rest of it or what happened during the rest of that time that isn't there. But I don't see how a judge can use any kind of a balancing test to say, well, you have 50% of the tape or you have some of it, so I'll let it in, or it's really bad, so I won't let it in. That kind of thing, that really opens up a whole Pandora's box. Either you're going to let this stuff in and then let the defense attorney cross-examine on it, or you're not going to let it in at all, I think.
It seems that something like that would go to the weight of the evidence rather than the admissibility of it.
Yeah, exactly. It'll go to the credibility, not the admissibility, I'd guess. Most times a judge would rule that way.
That's it. I mean, if it's...
So are we done? So are we sort of filing at windmills because we don't know about the practice of criminal law? Is that what we're doing here? I'm looking at Senator Shoemaker and myself.
True me. Well, it does go, when you have a situation like that, it just depends on how much of it you believe under those circumstances. And I think it should be weighed, and it may be given a lot of weight, and it may not.
Madam Chair, may I put one other factor before
yes,
you,
please.
That present law is... presently intentionally failed to record in its entirety. That's what present law is. And so we've just adopted the same phrase, and you can see it in line 15 on page 2 where we bracketed out that. That's what present law is. I don't know that we've had any demonstrated difficulty with that. It basically says that if there are problems with that tape or how it was recorded in its entirety, then that can be brought up. And it goes to weight, not to admissibility. If we tinker around with intentionally, we get into new areas. And we've just adopted the same language that's presently there.
I think we're ready to go, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, maybe I'm ready.
Okay.
So we have all those other amendments.
Well, we have adopted conversations. We have adopted and or recordings. Records, and we have reinstated the word direct under supervision, and
the reporting requirement contained in the dash two amendments.
And the reporting requirement from dash two amendments.
We're going to use language consistent with the previous bill about crimes punishable as felony under.
Right.
And that'll have to be worked in, and we're going to make the reference to conversation in lines 23 to 29 to be referenced to conversation
yeah,
as
that's
well.
That's already been adopted.
No, we haven't.